trusty money remains the bedrock of stability. The soul of money is trust.
I think we are not paying sufficient attention to the law of unintended consequences.
In the immortal words of the Doors, the time to hesitate is through.
Scott Mallory, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah, you're very welcome. I appreciate you spending your scarce time and finite energy telling us the story of how you discovered Bitcoin. It's always a very fascinating story, I think. Every single guest that I've had on so far has been just, yeah, very interesting. A lot of universal themes cropping up and I don't expect anything too different this time around.
Yeah, maybe we'll surprise you.
Well, I hope so. Eric Voskiel did a few weeks ago, so you know, it's entirely possible.
Yeah.
How did you? And you feel free to answer both. I must admit, actually, at the top of this, this is the first podcast episode of Discovering Bitcoin that we've done with two guests at the same time. So,
wow, well, that's exciting.
That's cool. And I will adjust as required. I'll do my best to adjust on the fly, live as we go. Effectively, the questions, I guess, are open to both of you. In fact, I don't guess. They are. So feel free to answer any way you wish. How did you discover Bitcoin?
I guess
do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first since I, from a, for those that don't know, we are married. So that our origin story kind of crosses paths at the around the same time, but I'll start first since I was the one who initially kind of led that charge. And actually, my origin story would even go back farther than that. In the first time I personally remember hearing about Bitcoin was watching the local news. We're based here in San Diego, and it was a story on the first Bitcoin ATM coming to the city. And I want to say this was probably somewhere around 2013, 2014. I don't know for sure, but that's my best guess. But I remember watching the news, seeing that, and for whatever reason, that always stuck in the back of my head. Never did anything with that knowledge at that time, unfortunately. So fast forward, I guess, 3-4 years into kind of that, you know, the typical story of somebody who sees the 2017, 2018 number go up, bull run, and that's what kind of sucked me back in initially. And then at that time, Mallory and I guess we're newly married about a year or so. And so being a married couple is never just sucking one of us in, it's both. And, I know she would freely admit initially it was just more my interest and, Mallory going along with it and understanding, not just the Bitcoin side, obviously, like with many of the stories that I've heard people talk about on your show, but going down the shitcoin side of things as well and learning and that transformation from, kind of going down that ramp took probably like 3 or 4 months before realizing, okay, this is just Bitcoin focus and go on from there. And then kind of that dovetailed into creating Shamri, which I think is really when Mallory's true Bitcoin story began, in my opinion.
I know you were telling both of ours. Yeah.
I tried to be a professional and lead you into it.
Thank you. Yeah. I will just kind of summarize, I suppose, what Scott already said for me, but in the beginning, yeah, it was just like table talk over dinner or like on the couch. Scott would talk to me about Bitcoin and it really wasn't anything that I was too interested in. And I like to be honest about saying that. But when we launched Shamri, once I started going to these Bitcoin events or Bitcoin meetups or conferences, and I started talking with other families, that's when my Bitcoin journey began, because I really took to the Bitcoin community, like how open they are, how friendly, how welcoming everybody has been. And that's what drove my passion and still actually what excites me the most about Bitcoin and our company.
That's really interesting, because a lot of Bitcoiners that I speak to, not necessarily on the pod, but maybe at meetups and such, is that if they have significant others, and it's generally speaking, you know, the husband, the man that's sort of discovered Bitcoin initially, and just sort of bores the ear off their partner, and their partner sort of, you know, politely entertains, nods and smiles. Oh yeah, he's talking about Bitcoin again. That's great, cool. Listening. We've got a bunch of other things I got to get done. You know, I'm like that. I just didn't shut up about Bitcoin for ages to my partner, and still don't, to be perfectly honest. And I'm not sure if they fully grok the significance. Perhaps they do, only because it's been such a long time and I still haven't shut up about it. But I'm curious to know, Mallory, like how those initial days when Scott was just talking to you about this thing, Bitcoin, and you were like, okay, I don't know what you're talking about, but it sounds interesting. And if it's interesting to you, then that's great and I support you in it. How is this playing out?
I would say that you're being very generous for how our conversation is. I don't know if from the beginning I was like, wow, if that interests you, then that interests me. I think I just more listened. And I don't really think that it interests me very much in the beginning. But like I said, what started interesting me was when I started getting out from our house and our, you know, small conversations and started having conversations with other people. And I'd still say to this day, all of these kind of what you hit on, these conferences and groups and other conversations, they're mainly male dominated, but there are some females in this space. So it does excite me. And there's plenty of other moms and homeschool families that come over to our table. And I love those types of conversations.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like contextualizing it outside of, I guess, the most familiar person, individual that you're aware of. I think there's some huge value in being able to recontextualize this thing, Bitcoin, or whatever the subject is, outside of, say, your immediate partner or even like a brother or a sister or immediate family member, and recognizing that there are other people that are just as passionate and just as interested and curious about this thing. And I guess that then spurs your curiosity a little further.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because I've been trying to orange peel my partner, and it's hard. I'm trying to figure out a cheat code here, you know?
I know. You know, your comment actually triggered a story that's kind of relevant to this topic, but it also jumps around a bit. So, you know how you mentioned that you like to just orange pill everybody around. You know, when Scott and I first started Shamari and got more interested in Bitcoin, we would do a similar thing where we would just talk to people about it like all the time, right? Even if I don't think they wanted to talk about it, including our parents. We have two moms, and neither moms are interested and can really even understand Bitcoin, but we would chat with them anyways, and they never really had an interest in it. And then one day, both him and I kind of made the decision that we weren't going to just speak at people about it anymore. We were going to wait for them to make conversation with us about it.
Right.
Because we had already made pretty obvious that we were interested in it, but now we needed to see if other people were interested in reciprocating that conversation. So we hadn't talked to our moms about it in quite some time because it was obvious they weren't interested, but we have this book, Goodnight Bitcoin, that we wrote together. And Scott and I were out one night, and my mom was doing the nighttime babysitting routine. And our daughter gets to pick out a couple books before bed, and she has lots of options, but she does like to pick out Goodnight Bitcoin. And so my mom read it to her, and there's a line in the very beginning about Satoshi, and it reads, "There once was a friendly monster named Satoshi with a fun idea. And when we got home from dinner that night, when our daughter was sleeping, my mom had said to us, oh, I read that book that you made. Like, what is that name? Like, she couldn't even pronounce it. Satoshi. Like, how did you come up with it? Like, what made you think of that?" And that was the first time ever that our moms or my mom had asked us a question about Bitcoin. And it was such a significant moment. Because to her, she didn't even really know it was related. She thought it was just a name that we had made up.
That's cool. And did you obviously then that triggered sort of a More questions from her once you answered the question about Satoshi?
At least a few questions, more than she had ever asked in the past.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very significant. I like the fact that your daughter confirmed and verified the fact that the book is good and that she, you know, wanted to read it. You mentioned previously that it was the other people at the meetups and conferences and things, so that the community itself, or I mean the space, people get salty when you call it a community, but there are individuals making up a community of like-minded individuals that are all curious and interested about this thing. A friend of mine at one of the local meetups here suggested that we all bring our families to the next meetup. And I sort of, we mulled it around and my conclusion was, what's going to happen is that we'll all just stand around talking about Bitcoin and our partners will chase the children around. And so it'll basically just be like anything else, except they'll have more work to do and won't care about Bitcoin. Have you had a similar sort of experience?
Not really. Most of our interactions have come more at conferences than meetups. So our daughter's three, she's almost four. So as parent, if you're those parents out there listening would know, kind of that, that nighttime routine between say 5 and 8 is, can be chaotic and pretty scheduled, which also happens to coincide with when, many Bitcoin meetups are essentially particularly here in San Diego. So we haven't actually been to the local meetup for a while for primarily those reasons. Mm-hmm. So most of our interactions come at conferences, whether it's in Miami or at Pacific Bitcoin last year or a few others, where the families that we do see there, they're all there by choice, since it's more of a longer haul to, you know, you're traveling to a conference, paying for a ticket, getting a hotel, that sort of thing. So I think it's more that everybody's involved in one way or another, as opposed to kind of what the situation like you're explaining there, where it could be kind of a 50-50 split. But I do know from talking to other meetups from around the States in particular, where there's many that are very family and kid friendly. So whether they're at, you know, big breweries that are kid friendly and have games and that sort of thing. So that is something that I do see and hear other people from around the States in particular talk about with their meetups in their area.
Yeah, it's a tricky one to sort of juggle because you want to expose them to that other context and other people, other families, other individuals that have, you know, discovered Bitcoin. And at the same time, you kind of, I mean, my thinking was it's not really going to be the right way to orange pill because effectively we'll be so distracted by other things that, you know, it won't be as effective as we may have first thought.
I think at least what we feel is one of the easiest ways for people to become interested in Bitcoin and then actually want to learn about it is you kind of have to tailor that conversation to their personality too. So just, you know, dropping someone into a meetup where that personality isn't known is probably a bit tougher. Whereas if you know the audience you're talking to, you can tailor it to, you know, maybe you start talking about how maybe somebody strictly, you know, number go up focus, you want to focus there. Maybe other people want to learn about how, you know, mining can be good for the climate. Other people might want to learn about the nonprofit work that groups like Built with Bitcoin are doing. So each person is going to have their own kind of angle on what's going to kind of hopefully capture their interest.
Yeah, it's definitely you got to meet them where they stand. As opposed to just, yeah, like what you do, I guess, when you're excited, in the early days and you just want to tell every single person you can, shout it from the rooftops. Couple of touch points that you, I'm not sure if we actually got to that, Scott, but, obviously, going down the Shamari, route and writing that book was a significant influence on yourself, Mallory, but Scott, were there certain touch points early days? I mean, you mentioned the sort of number go up tech around 2017 and getting wrapped up in all of that, which is a lot of us. Were there anything else that sort of pinged off in your brain that you may have dismissed initially? And I'm curious to know if there was a moment that you can remember when you first realized, oh, I should probably learn a little bit more about this thing?
I think it was a combination of a few different things, and part of it being a mixture of my personality and my professional background. So even from a young kid, I was a saver. So I was always getting money for birthdays or Christmas or whatever it is. And instead of going out and buying something right away, I was putting it away, putting it in the bank, you know, always excited about seeing kind of that balance go up from a very, very young age. So kind of that longer term focus, low time preference, it was always instilled in me from a young child. So I think that played a heavy role in it. And then secondarily, before all this, when I first got out of college, I was a public accountant and I worked on the audit side of things. So my job for 3+ years was going into companies and verifying their records were accurate. So kind of the verification side of a public ledger and Bitcoin really made sense there. So at least in my opinion, those two factors were the initial touch points that kind of helped me kind of understand what Bitcoin was. And then on the scarcity side of things, I was always, as a kid, into collecting baseball cards, which, you know, you collect ones that are, you know, 1 of 10 or 1 of 100, you understood those were worth more than the ones that were, you know, 1 of 100,000. Yeah. So, you know, those little things that were always instilled in me growing up, I think played a role in understanding many of the facets of Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's interesting. The open public ledger idea, I think Peter Dunworth mentioned that on the pod. And that is a curious innovation, I think. That's an important innovation, I guess, from an accounting side of things. If you are, you know, of that
mindset,
right? Thank you. Bitcoin and the ledger that it is actually an incredibly useful tool for doing accounting, I guess.
Yeah. It definitely can be. I know there's I'm blanking on his name now, even though I just heard it on a podcast this morning. I think his first name's Darren. He talks about the Tripper ledger accounting. He's talked about it on a few different podcasts and how Bitcoin can revolutionize that side of things. So yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And those people in those jobs, hopefully, if they take the time to understand it, it should make sense to them.
Mallory, why do you think that you are open and able to discovering Bitcoin?
I think in general, I am open to discovering and understanding all different sorts of things. I think it's just kind of in my personality. I'm pretty open to understanding a lot of different things. But I think that, you know, having a project that my partner and I work really hard on and work collaboratively on, you know, that excites me too. And it happens to be all around Bitcoin, which meeting people all around the globe, like just even people like yourself through like podcasts or just conversations. I value that a lot too. And that seems to push me forward as well.
So there was nothing specific, like Scott was mentioning, with regards to saving as a young kid and sort of taking that through. It was more of the collaborative aspect and the creative aspect, I guess, of this project, Shamari, and the book that you guys have created, and the characters as well.
Yeah, I do think that is, which is, you know, complete polar opposites, but maybe that's why we make a good match in this year.
Yeah, well, Paula Abdul had a song, I think, in the 80s called Opposites Attract, so.
There we go.
There you go. Talk to me a little bit about Shamari and the book Goodnight Bitcoin, because it seems to me like you're helping to orange pill children. And I have a few kids-orientated books with regards to Bitcoin in our house, and I always get accused of, brainwashing? and something else. I can't remember. It was some Nana at Christmas rolled her eyes, I think, when Santa brought Brekkie von Bitcoin's that Dr. Seuss style book. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head. But get a lot of rolled eyes, and we have some Tuttle twins in our house as well. And I find it curious that I get accused of brainwashing or propagandizing with the Bitcoin stories, but there's any number of other books that do exactly the same thing. It's just that this one doesn't happen to align with a lot of other people's understanding of the world and things in it.
Yeah, no, definitely understand what you're saying there. And, you know, hopefully, you know, part of the reason we've created the various Xiaomi products was to help people see that, you know, it isn't that side of things. And also, you know, so we have two books as well as a game. The game was our first product. And out of those three products specifically, all of them are also STEM authenticated. For those that don't know, STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. It, particularly here in the States, but also worldwide, having that authentication helps show how these sorts of products can be worked into curriculum, whether it's homeschool curriculum, public school curriculum, private STEM centers, but it doesn't matter. If somebody's picking up Goodnight Bitcoin, or if you give a Monster Bitcoin or our card game, and they're starting to say that to someone like yourself, like, oh, why are you doing that? You know, propagandizing to your child or whatever. You know, you could literally say, you know, this is financial education. This is STEM authenticated. This is concepts that should be taught in school, not just Bitcoin financial education, but just financial education in general. So that's part of the way we've kind of gone about showing that it's not those things that you were discussing at the beginning.
And have you had any experiences with parents maybe thinking that is sort of like this brainwashing thing, and then actually playing the game, reading the book, whatever the case may be, and then changing their minds?
I don't think so, because most of the audience that, you know, is reaching out and purchasing our stuff, they're Bitcoiners already.
Right.
So we don't hear that as much. The one kind of story that comes to mind is that one of my good friends growing up, he's not a Bitcoiner, but he helps support things, and he has a young child. And he's always told us, she's two now, that both of our books are two of our favorites. And I think it's partly everything we do is super bright colors. We have fun monster characters. So obviously as a 1 or 2 year old, she's not knowing that it's about Bitcoin. But he said one day they had left the house, and the grandmother was watching the child. And when she came back, the grandma had to read the book like, I don't know, something like 10 times or whatever, which is a common thing. And the grandma said something about, you know, I think this is just brainwashing, brainwashing Molly or whatever. So that's the one thing, the one personal story that comes to mind, which is funny. And obviously he's a friend of ours, so he was saying it in a joking way.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed the story of the grandfather about the mining.
Yeah. That
wasn't a brainstorming one, but that was quite the,
yeah. So
quite the difference.
Our game, you don't have to know anything about Bitcoin mining going into it, but it does teach about Bitcoin mining as you play it. And especially for those that know how mining works. And we had a story, this was early on, so probably 2+ years ago. And somebody had got the game and reached back out to us and said, hey, you know, we were playing it the other day with the two kids, I believe, my son, my daughter, my wife, and either his dad or the wife's dad, so a grandfather. And a couple weeks after playing, the grandpa came back over and had started mining Bitcoin himself because of the interest that he got from playing the game.
No way.
That's a crazy story. Very exciting.
Yeah, not expected, and just cool to hear. So
that's very cool to hear. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Talk to me about the game then, because I am not too familiar with it. I've seen it around the traps on Twitter and so on. And to be fair, to be frank, this conversation is one of the most most exposure I think I've had to the game. And I think it's probably because of the geographical difference I have, distance I have. I certainly can't walk into a store. I could get it maybe on Amazon or something, I guess.
So we ship worldwide from our website, but obviously to your point, shipping to Australia does get pricey. We do see people who do it, which is awesome. yeah, one day hopefully there's ways around that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the game is played very similar to the game of memory. So we like to say if you or your child knows how to play memory, then you can play the game. So typically say ages 4 or 5 is a good starting point on up through adults. We have drinking game instructions, so it can get fun.
No way.
So those are out there as well. But essentially, it's a matching game where you're laying the nonce cards down flat on the table, and you have a stack of target cards. And so for those, you know, that don't know about Bitcoin mining, what we've done is taken everything else about mining and simplified it down to, at the end of the day, a computer needs to match a target and a nonce. And if those two things sync up, then the next block is mined. And so what the players are doing is they're using their mental energy to match the characters on these cards one at a time to be able to create those blocks. And then each time that's done, that player gets a Bitcoin reward. There's attacks along the way. There's difficulty adjustments along the way. The goal of the game is to mine the blockchain from a block height of 0, or the Genesis block, all the way up to 10. And at the end of the day, the player with the most rewards is the overall winner. But one thing that we hear over and over again from parents in particular is how the game is both competitive and collaborative at the same time. Because if the chain gets attacked, the game is over for everybody. And so it shows how, you know, just because maybe Johnny won because he mined 5 and Susie Moon did 4 and somebody else did 3, you know, they might feel like they lost. But once they learn that they're all protecting the blockchain together, then they feel like they have a sense of accomplishment, no matter how many blocks they've mined. So that kind of collaborative and competitive nature is something that parents over and over again tell us feedback on.
That's really cool. I want to play this game now. Can you remember when you first came up with this idea and, you know, how you were sort of fleshing this out? Because I can imagine you would have just, I don't know, been doing something and then, I've got an idea. We should do X and then flesh that out. Because, I mean, it seems like a very fun game to play, but you've taken this enormous complexity and simplified it down to quite literally ELI5.
Yeah. So it was a process that started probably sometime in late 2018, and it really began, you know, like we touched on earlier, it really was, while Mallory was supportive, it was me just on the Bitcoin side of things, wanting to explore ways to be involved in the space. And then it kind of coincided nicely with the fact that we were starting a family ourselves. And so recognizing that there really wasn't much of anything out there for kids in particular to start learning about Bitcoin. The fact that we were, you know, soon to become parents ourselves, then kind of brought us both together to be able to figure out what it was that we could create. And then going through the process of understanding, you know, Bitcoin mining and kind of having the aha moment around how it can relate back to the game of memory really was the trigger. And we will say there were multiple versions of very bad and,
very
not,
bad.
And not fun versions.
Very bad.
That in particular, our brother and sister-in-law, Mallory's sister, yeah, and her
husband.
They
were good troopers.
They had to endure. And at the time, they were not Bitcoiners. They have Bitcoin, so we can, yes, call them that. But at that time, that, they didn't. So they would just come over and they got free drinks. So there was that.
Right. Incentives all the way.
Yes.
The first ones were not good. And the other aha moment really was the fact that those initial versions weren't played with images when we were matching. They were too complex. They had more numbers and they were actually trying to show too much complexity about what Bitcoin mining is. But once we decided to create these characters, that's what kind of took the game to the next level of kind of being enjoyable and fun and easy at the same time.
Very, very cool. It's I think one of my buddies at the meetup the other day was talking about the gamification of, you know, understanding Bitcoin and Bitcoin education, which is what you're doing.
Yep.
And that's a really effective way to learn, you know, when you're playing a game. And I think this has a huge role to play. You've kind of piqued my interest here. I'm gonna have to maybe suck up the postage and handling and try and get my hands on one. How's Bitcoin changed you?
Well, one big way is through the creation of Shamari, it's allowed myself to be able to leave my full-time job to be able to focus on this company over the past year, which is something that probably neither of us could have thought about, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago. And in doing so, it's been able to allow us to be able to spend more time and have flexibility as a family, especially as, you know, both of us, for the most part, work from home. Mallory still has her full-time job that she has to attend to, but essentially being able to create her own schedule and balance work out with time with our daughter and time all together as a family and trips and vacations. And so that's the biggest thing is the flexibility that we've been able to have as a family, in my opinion.
It's a hard one to beat.
It is a hard one to beat. That's what the game has allowed you to, or at least the development and the success of the game. But what about Bitcoin itself? Since learning about this protocol and how it works, what it does, what it's for, and why it's is what it is there anything that stands out as to how you've maybe changed as an individual?
I think it would probably go back to go back to part of my earlier answer where I said that, you know, from a young age, I always kind of had that low time preference mentality. So being on this side of things and Bitcoin in general, I think has really just helped reinforce that.
So to give it clarity, I suppose. Did you have a concept of time preference, or is it just more the long game is the best game to play?
I think more the latter. I kind of learned more about what low time preference was through learning about Bitcoin would be more accurate.
What about you, Mallory?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I think it's provided a financial literacy and financial conversations that I had never really had previously. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, reflecting on, you know, the type of financial literacy that I got in school, which I would say is extraordinarily minimal. And even at home, you know, my family, we didn't talk about money. And I think a lot of families don't talk about money. And not even in a teaching way. And so when I started learning about Bitcoin, obviously, but then I also had to compare it to our, you know, mainstream financial system.
Right.
Scott's been great at, you know, having conversations about that, but I would say it's really expanded on my financial literacy. Absolutely.
And your game is helping children to develop their financial literacy, I suppose. I mean, they're understanding obviously the way Bitcoin works, but then that leads to more questions. And I think that's a severely underserved and underrated aspect of everybody's life, really. I mean, as you said, the financial literacy in terms of my own experience, it's chalk and cheese, really. You know, it was, I had no idea really what money was or anything like that. And you go down this orange rabbit hole and you come out the other side far more aware of how things work because we have this tradable commodity called money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that's even, while I probably as a kid growing up, maybe had slightly more financial education in my life, not necessarily from school,
right?
But from the home. But I wouldn't say it's a lot. But you know, I find it enjoyable learning about, you know, what is the banking crisis? What is, you know, what are bonds? What are, you know, what are all the stuff that's going on? Where for all this, I would have had, you know, zero to no knowledge of anything. So just being able to understand just kind of the global economy in a greater way has been a huge benefit.
Yeah, and other kids as well, learning about that and getting that from the get-go is going to serve them. We're talking about the long game and this concept of low time preference. I mean, if you can instill in a child the understanding, the fundamentals of what money is and how an economy, or what an economy is, people economizing their time and energy, right? Then you're going to have a cohort of individuals grow up and really come to grips with it. And that's going to be where the game is truly changed, I think.
Yeah. And we've always liked saying, and we see it in our own life, the fact that if nothing else, the thing that our games and books or our new plush toy or whatever it is provides a child is just the comfort in knowing that Bitcoin and the word Bitcoin itself isn't something scary bad. That's kind of the first step in that learning process. So if we do nothing else than bring that level of comfort, then we've, you know, accomplished our job. And we see it in our daughter. She just thinks of Bitcoin as Bitcoin. She knows Satoshi and how because of these stories. She just kind of understands it as a thing that's out there that mom and dad go off and they do as a job in some way that she doesn't really understand. They sell things and they have these monsters on them, and that's her level of comfort going forward as she grows, that it's, you know, just something in her life.
Do you have any stories from older kids that have played the game, that have experienced the books and so on, that over a significant amount of time? I mean, how long have you been doing this for? Sort of 2020?
Yeah, so the game came out in April of 2020. So
good actually, timing.
Yeah, it might actually be to the day. It's right around like literally this day. So almost 3 years for the game. And then the first book, Goodnight Bitcoin, came out about a year later. And then the second book came out about 6 months ago. And then, the other products from there and our most recent thing is the Water Project with Built with Bitcoin Foundation. So the older kids, there's groups out there that are in particular with the game that have worked the game into their curriculum to be able to weave it into the concepts, particularly when they're talking about Bitcoin mining. And so we've seen that happen with different summer camps. There's a gentleman that we're working with right now who is working on opening up Bitcoin STEM centers across the nation and has built a curriculum around the game in particular. And so, especially over the past year, we've seen a lot more of these things bubbling up. We have a good friend who has an education center in Honduras on Roatan, where he goes out to different schools, both on Roatan and other areas of Honduras, and teaches through the game and the books and other products. So there's a community of Bitcoin educators out there that are focusing on these sorts of products and curriculum for kids of all ages that we're always excited to work with and especially talk with in person. And we had a great kind of educator meetup in Miami last year, which I'm sure we'll do the same.
Yeah, in the conference. In Miami.
Yeah, at the Bitcoin conference, one of the side things that it was informal, but. It's a small group of people that are kind of working on the kids side of things. So we all got together at one of the taco shops one night and talked about it and got to see each other for the first time in some cases.
So what is the Water Project?
Yeah. So the Water Project, is something that we've, launched about 2 weeks ago now. So for those that know, we're in the beginning of April. And we're doing it in partnership with the Built with Bitcoin Foundation. For those that don't know who they are a nonprofit that does work globally, but in particular on the continent of Africa, building schoolhouses, water wells, learning centers, other types of things through Bitcoin donations. And so we've worked with them over the past couple of years in various ways. We've donated books, donated games. Last year during the Bitcoin Miami conference, we donated a portion of sales to help partly build a water well. And so what we've done is one of the top questions Mallory and I would always get when talking to people would be, you know, your monster characters are awesome. You know, when are you creating a plush toy of one of them? And, you know, it was always in the back of our head. But as we thought more about it, instead of just creating a plush toy of one of the characters, we wanted to kind of do more than that. And so what we've done is created a plush toy using our purple monster character known as Satoshi and changed him around a bit where he's holding in his hand, he or she, I guess, is holding in their hand a Bitcoin kind of circular coin but it has on it the embroidered Bitcoin B along with the continent of Africa. So it kind of symbolizes the Bitcoin work going on down in the Africa area. And what we're doing is partnering with the Bitcoin Foundation and donating 21% of the gross sale directly to them. So with the goal of raising $7,000 and building a fully brand new water well through one of their projects down there. And so we're excited about making that come to life.
Very cool. Very cool. And I mean, in terms of Bitcoin adoption, there are parts of Africa which are light years ahead of the world, really. Yeah. We're listening to Marcel quite a few episodes back now, and she's doing incredible work with Bitcoin education for women. And so I guess this is just another aspect of this fledgling, nascent Bitcoin education experience that people are taking to the world, in particular, obviously this instance to Africa. Are there specific regions of Africa that you're targeting and operating within, or is it all over?
So they've
it's a big continent, you know.
They've done work in, I believe it's 11 different areas of Africa over the past, I think it's 6 years. So they're pretty spread out on the continent. We haven't, and this will be that this side of things will be led by Yusuf and the Built with Bitcoin team, identified the specific spot where the well will be made. But it'll be in one of those areas that they know the community and target and see that need. So, you know, our goal is to make that happen, hopefully before the end of the year.
And so it's early days, but you mentioned it's been happening for a few weeks now. Have you had any feedback in regards to how it's unfolding?
Yeah, you know, in terms of the project itself, tons of positive feedback. You know, the initiative and the mission behind it. On that side of things. So right now, there's literally only one of these plush toys created. We're actually staring at it. It's our daughter's. It's the sample that got made. So the pre-orders are what people can purchase right now. The manufacturing will be done actually in the next few days, and then they'll be shipped off so that sometime in most likely May, the actual physical products can start being sent out. So we can't wait to see kids you know, from around the world with these toys in their hands. That side of things. And we also just launched this week a gift a chamois promotion. So we call these chamois, the plush toys, where if people, maybe they don't have kids in their lives, or maybe they do and they just want to give in other ways, people can come to the website and purchase either single plush toys or a bundle. And those ones in particular will actually get gifted to children in Africa when Built with Bitcoin goes down there and does their trips. And so if people don't want to purchase one for themselves, they can come to the website and donate one to a child in Africa.
Very, very cool. Very cool. Speaking of the world then, what have both of you learned about the world? And more importantly, yourself, since discovering Bitcoin?
Gosh, how big and small the world is. it's a good one. I mean, the world is in such an interesting state currently. Go ahead, Scott. I'll let you answer first.
I would say
ponder this one.
I would say on the positive side, we've learned how people from around the world can connect and be friends through these sorts of meet, whether it's podcasts or Twitter or just different communication models, and just how friendly and helpful everybody is. I think that's something that probably is the biggest personal impact from the worldwide thing that we've seen, where, you know, we can literally say there's places around the world that we could, you know, see people that we've become friends with without ever meeting in person. And then, you know, more on the Bitcoin side of things, I think it probably goes back to your earlier question just around how, you know, the financial economy is, it's all interwoven in very weird and convoluted ways that, I know we never really understood before going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole.
Yeah, it's a confronting thing, I think, when you peel the onion, the layers of the onion back, and there's it doesn't tend to jive with a lot of people's views of the world or pre-existing views of the world, and it can be quite a jarring experience learning things about the world that you thought were true or that you thought were real and have turned out to not be quite accurate as you may have first thought.
Yep, exactly.
Have you pondered long enough, Mallory?
Well, that was a good recap. I think I'll just leave it with his answer.
Well, the format of the podcast is also, what have you learned more specifically about yourself since discovering Bitcoin?
Well, I mean, to go back to my other answer, I think I learned about myself that I didn't really know much about our financial system. Yeah, and I'm still learning it. And it's just becoming more and more relevant, you know, every day in our current situation. So I'd say I definitely learned how undereducated I was on our financial system and the different options out there. And I think I'd also learned that there Bitcoin really showed me that there's a community of people like myself or who have a similar interest in Bitcoin like me around the world. And it's not that hard to get in touch with them, right? I think like day to day, I can feel like my community and the people around me are so small and there's only a few of them. But, you know, Bitcoin really showed me that it's really global. And I've been so blessed to be able to talk to people like yourself or meet people just from all over and have similar interests and have good conversation.
I would say it also showed you how there's the overlap between Bitcoin and homeschool.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah, it's really introduced me and opened my eyes and really made us ponder homeschooling for our daughter. And at this point, that's strongly the way that we're going. Mm-hmm. In previous to Bitcoin, I really probably would have sent our daughter to just our traditional local school. But through Bitcoin and through meeting with other families, it's really opened my eyes to the different options out there for homeschooling. And we're really confident that that's probably the better route for us.
Yeah. The homeschooling, route, the homeschooling subject is a fascinating one. We had Daniel Prince on, a little while back, and he's obviously a huge advocate for that and wrote the book Choose Life. It is one of those other aspects of the orange rabbit hole that one gets exposed to with respect to education. And the homeschooling route, yeah, if you were at the top of the hole, you'd be thinking there's no way. Like, we'll just go to the traditional school, the public school, the whatever the local school in the area is, as you said. And now you're sort of thinking more along the lines of, how do I make this homeschooling work? What can I do to serve, you know, the best education for my child? And maybe this homeschooling thing isn't actually as bad as I maybe previously first thought. And then if you combine that with the products that you're making with respect to education, particularly in and around Bitcoin, you're actually actively contributing to children's education and them understanding the world. And I dare say that a lot of the people that it's most resonating with are from a homeschooling background rather than the more traditional side of things.
Yep.
Is that fair?
Yeah, that's definitely.
Yeah, I think so.
Definitely fair. And it's actually kind of funny that the very, very first podcast that we ever did was Daniel's, and he's become a great friend of ours and gone on a few times and connected over the homeschool side of things. So just that was kind of maybe the other beautiful thing that has happened from creating Shamari, just seeing the, like Mallory said, the homeschool side of things and helping that shape what we want for our personal life.
Yeah. And giving your daughter the best start that she can have outside of your own particular sphere of influence, I suppose, is crucial.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
apart from the game and apart from the books, when you're out and about, someone asks what you do and you talk about Charmery, how do you explain the book, you explain the business, but how do you explain Bitcoin?
I don't think we necessarily do until, so, you know, they'll say what we do and they'll say, oh, you know, we have a company, you know, it's called Charmery, you know, we have different books and games and products for people, in particular kids of all ages, to start learning about Bitcoin. And it really kind of depends on, you know, does it look like they're actually interested, or are they just moving on to the next thing or whatever? And, you know, like in most conversations, it's more of a polite question rather than actually being interested. So it kind of goes back to the earlier answer, where unless the person's going to show interest in the company or ask about Bitcoin itself, which does happen every once in a while, you know, we'll let them keep that in the back of their heads so that they know, you know, down the line, if they want to reach out and have questions, you know, they know where to go. But that's kind of the general stance that we typically take.
Yeah. Okay. What about your friends, family members? Have they been curious? Have been able to effectively orange pill them since beginning the business?
A few of the close, so some of our siblings. Yes. We each have a couple of siblings, and my mom. Although she's not, she was orange pilled more by, I wouldn't say by force, but by. But just by, you know, she's a single mom and trying to help take care of her just finances and that sort of thing.
Relentless conversations about Bitcoin.
Exactly. Right. Like, more so, like, she trusts me and so that sort of thing. So I wouldn't necessarily call her a Bitcoiner, but it was effective.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the antithesis of, you say the thing long enough, over and over enough, it becomes, I think it's more related to that Goebbels quote, like if you say a lie loud enough and long enough and over enough, you know, it becomes the truth. But I think you could wield that a little bit more palatably and kindly by just, I did the same thing with my mom, you know. She talks about naked profiteering by all the businesses, and it's the reason why, you know, eggs are $1 million and strawberries are this much, and everyone's just, you know, taking off the top and making ludicrous profits. I'm like, well, no, that's not true. As I've spoken to you about it a number of times in the past, inflation is everywhere and always a monetary phenomenon. You've got too many dollars chasing too few goods, etc. And then as soon as you sort of go on that route, yeah, it's. I'm still unsure how well it's resonated, so I might have to try a gamification tact, I think.
There you go. Yeah. Shout out to everyone's moms right now.
Right on, right on, guys. This has been a really cool conversation. I as I said at the top, my experience with Charmery was mostly just through Twitter and online, but the game, and particularly with my own set of circumstances, I think has resonated a lot more with me than maybe I previously expected. And I hope that there's people listening that have also listened and this conversation's resonated, because, you know, this pod isn't specifically designed to promote products and things. It's more about people's personal discoveries. But this is a tool that can be wielded to effectuate people's discovery of Bitcoin and deepen their understanding, even just from the mining aspect. So I like to think I've got a decent grasp of mining, but I think somehow that this game might solidify it a little bit further, which is really cool. So I'm going to have to open my Amazon app on the phone when I and check the postage and handling.
There you go. Well, we can't wait to hear the feedback.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you, guys. This has been a real, real great pleasure. I appreciate you spending your scarce time, finite energy, on discovering Bitcoin. Thank you.
No, thank you so much.
Great to be here. Happy to chat and go down the rabbit hole.
practice.
Yeah.